Hello, everybody. My name is Joe Vargas, and you're listening to My Swift Journey podcast, my adventures of becoming an iOS developer. Buddy, it's your buddy Joe. It is January 14th, Saturday, January 14th, 2023. It is 5:03 p.m. I hope everyone's doing well. I hope this episode finds you well. It's week two of the new year, so I hope everything's going great for you. I hope if you all made any resolutions, I hope they're going great for you guys. It's week two, at my new job, as a iOS developer for Martian Craft. I had mentioned that I was going to make this, a weekly podcast now that I got this new position. So this is episode two of season two. And, it was a good week. It wasn't as productive as I was hoping. Majority of not being productive or as productive as I wanted to be, it was kind of out of my hands. I started off with the week pretty much still not having any access to the code base for the client, and again, a lot of it was, you know, out of my hands. I kept reaching out to the right people that could follow up with the client and to see what the holdup was. But before I get more into that, I just wanted to also bring up another topic of what it's like. I guess I'm not gonna call this, you know, the actual life, the day life of, you know, a mobile software developer, because I still haven't. I feel like I haven't gotten the full experience of it yet. I'm pretty sure that's to come soon. But I will say this. I did get to experience constant meetings throughout this whole week. I must have had 6 total meetings this whole week. And a lot of them were calls over Zoom and Teams. And that, having 6 calls like that, was more than I've ever been used to, even at my previous occupation. But, you know, I've read stories, I've seen videos of, you know, software developers saying that, oh yeah, you probably will have more calls than you have time to code. And I mean, just having these 6 calls during the week, I'm kind of getting a glimpse of what they were saying. So pretty much these calls were just meeting personnel within the client company. And, you know, they got to meet me as well. And the minority of the meetings were getting familiar with GitHub Enterprise infrastructure and the workflows. A lead developer named Chris, I believe I mentioned this last week, he and I were following up on how to implement GitHub Actions into the enterprise. So that was an ongoing dialogue with him. And I did get to work with Chris to get familiar with GitHub Actions and what he was trying to implement. And after this one certain meeting on Wednesday, I did request from Chris if he can share this particular app that I believe they want to assign me to. And because I didn't have any access yet to the repo on their GitHub infrastructure, I asked him if maybe he could share any type of documentation, heck, even the README file of the app itself. But he went a little bit above and beyond and he shared the actual project straight out of a build, a branch that was still in development. So he shared that with me. And I opened it up, and I swear, I mean, this is like the first time I'm catching, you know, insight, a glimpse as to what an app looks like in the enterprise. I mean, I was going just about file through, file by file, and just reading the code, see what, you know, it, what was being done in this particular file, so on and so forth. And one of the files, three of the files that got me just blown away was the use of core data within the app. Now, reading these files, the best way I can describe it was like me reading Hamlet. there was a lot of, you know, high level functions, like this was obviously written by a senior developer. And I mean, the good thing is, like, I guess the one thing that I could pat on the back is that I at least identified that it's core data being implemented, core data being initialized and used throughout the app. And I got to see the actual properties of the core data, of what it's storing and stuff like that. Pretty much core data was written to, read, or updated based if the user was authenticated correctly, and the core data, or, you know, the like the persistent storage would clear once the user signed off. So again, what I found, you know, complex, at least, but at least I'm proud of, is that I was able to identify that it's persistent storage being implemented and how it's being initialized. And it was intimidating, to say the least, but I'm just happy I was able to identify what was going on and why it was happening. So then later on, probably Thursday or so, I had another call, and within this call, two people said that they were going to follow up with what's going on with my access. And one of the Martian craft personnel, he said that, you know, this is quite common of the client. You know, it takes a while for access to be granted. So it's nothing to, nothing to get like flustered over for, that, you know, these things happen. And I'm like, okay. You know, personally for me, I'm just like ready to go. I'm ready to hit the ground running. I was anxious, and, you know, I was just looking forward to reading code, get familiar with it, and, you know, see where they want me to or what they want me to work on. And the same guy who told me, you know, that these things take time as far as the access, he mentioned to me that he wanted to have a meeting with me Friday, which was yesterday. And maybe he got a little bit too busy or he forgot about me, but that call never happened. And I will say that, you know, previously when he was sure that he wanted to set time and talk to me, he would schedule something and he would send me a calendar invite. And but this time around, there was no calendar invite. So I was like, well, maybe, you know, he changed his mind, I guess he didn't have any time or he couldn't set time. He did mention that he wanted to, just talk about some tasks, I guess, he has for me. And, but, you know, I guess because maybe my other thinking is that maybe he heard that I still have not had access. So maybe, you know, what was the point of scheduling this call if I didn't have access to do what he wanted me to do? But thankfully, Friday, it was funny because around 2 p.m., pretty much 26 hours ago, I finally got the access I needed. I was able to see the GitHub Enterprise and all the repos, and actually get access to the repo of the app that they want me to work on. So, I mean, it just sucks that it was like already late in the afternoon and pretty much my day was over. But before I logged off, I made sure to clone the repo to my local station so I can at least have it there ready for me to go through. And yeah, I mean, and pretty much today I feel a little lazy. I just felt like chilling out, just enjoying my weekend, so I was actually planning on going through the code today and, again, just get familiar with it. And, but I was like, no, you know what? I'm just going to be lazy today. I got a 3-day weekend actually because of, Monday is Martin Luther King Day. We have off, thankfully. And, I was like, I have an extra day this weekend. I'll sit about 30 minutes. I'll take my laptop to Starbucks next door, open it up, read the code, get familiar with it, so on and so forth. But I wanted to enjoy my weekend, so this is what I'm doing. And then the reason I'm not recording this yesterday afternoon is, I just felt like relaxing. And I was like, you know what? I'll just do this tomorrow when my head's clear and stuff like that. So here I am talking to you guys. And moving on, before I get into this next cool topic here, I want to remind everybody that this coming Saturday is the iOS Dev Happy Hour. They just announced it. The ones who overlook the program or the group, they just announced that next Saturday, January 21st, at 11 a.m. Pacific time, y'all can adjust y'all's time zone there. It'll be time for their monthly iOS Dev Happy Hour Zoom call. So, looking forward to that. Initially, I reserved a spot on Eventbrite, and this is when I wasn't aware, but it was early on to the point where I committed to going, committed to attending, but just very recent, my sister asked if she can plan a visit this coming weekend. And look, that's my sister, that's my blood. I want to see her, I miss her. So of course I said, yes, please, visit if you want. So I may not be attending to this month's event. So please, if you can, take my spot, attend, meet some friends, meet people, network, do what you can. That way, you'll have a better, that way you can follow some great people who inspire and just motivate in terms of iOS development or any type of development. It's a fun group. They don't, care what you code or what your stack is or anything. It's a fun group of people, and everyone just has a good time there. So that's that. And this next topic, I never thought that I was going to get approached this early saying that I just started with Martian Craft. But on Twitter, I announced that I am an iOS developer. I was proud to announce that I'm an iOS developer for Martian Craft. And people got wind of that. They saw my post. And this one particular young lady, she reached out to me, direct messaged me. And she pretty much said that she saw my post, and this is what she says. Hi Joe, I've been following your journey to getting iOS developer job. I myself am a self-taught iOS developer who's currently looking for a junior position in the field. Do you have any suggestions in how to go from where you started and to where you are now? Congratulations on your new journey. So, I mean, I got this. I was just totally blown away because I remember years ago when I started this journey, I would reach out to people who are in that position already, who had just gotten their first job. And, you know, I was just wanting to pick their brain. And I remember at that time, I was like, you know what? I can't wait. I cannot wait to when I get my opportunity. And then, like, just wait for people to reach out to me. And I'm going to do the very best I can to give them some advice, give them some guidance on where, you know, how and how I got my first professional job. And, you know, I might have mentioned this in the last episode. I really want to start a YouTube channel where I offer my advice and guidance and stuff like that. Right now, that's still in the planning process. I'm still trying to at least get five topics to have five separate videos. And then, you know, post those videos, not in one hit, but like spread them out, maybe one video every 2 weeks or something like that. And also the scheduling, because I do have this podcast. I was hoping to record right away on Friday afternoons and maybe even on Saturday record the video. But again, here I am recording this podcast on a Saturday afternoon. So it kind of, you know, right off the bat, it didn't work out. I will try my best to maybe maintain a schedule like that, or maybe even record a podcast Friday, record the video Sunday. But again, we'll see what goes on. But I was blown away with, and her name is Thenny. I probably should have mentioned that. Her name is Thenny. And I could have responded. I could have responded with a text reply and everything, but I feel as though I'm a talker. You know, the best way I can express myself and, you know, my words and all that is by talking or a video or something. So I recorded her a Loom video, and it's pretty lengthy. So that's why I didn't want to as far as my week, how it went, I didn't want to go too much detail into it. I just wanted to give you all the general aspect of it, because I wanted to share the video, not the video, but the audio of the video of what I sent to her. And the audio, it's going to be, the video is about 35 minutes long. So it's possibly going to take the majority of this episode. So, I wanted to share the audio that I shared with her, and I hope you enjoy the audio. And I'm about to play that in a few short minutes. Here we go. Enjoy.
Hi, Thenny. My name is Joe. I saw your message this morning, and I thank you. I was blown away by your message, actually. Thank you for the congratulations. I hope you don't mind me sending you this video. I feel as though I can communicate a little better when I speak. And I get to convey, you know, my actual emotion through the words I want to say. I don't think I could do that, express that in a text message. Plus, you know, it would be a lengthy text message. But again, thank you. And I apologize if I mispronounced your name. So in order for me to give my advice before I can tell you how I got to where I am, I would like to share on why I got to where I am. I feel as though that the story behind it kind of underscores my reason to get where I am today. So I hope this video is not too long. I am a bit of a storyteller, but I'll try, you know, I'll respect your time that it takes for you to watch this. But basically, my whole career, my whole background has been in IT. I've always been into computers one way or another. And about 10 years ago or so, when I came to here in Houston, I met up I've made some friends, and they were in the oil and gas industry, which is a major industry here in the city. It's a very dominant industry. And they were pretty much in the IT sector of the industry. And they got me on board. And I started with this one company in February of 2012. And right off the bat, I liked it. It was new. It was exciting. It was fast-paced. And it was, financially, I was, in good hands. And I got to, learn a new skill, outside of IT. And, I got to travel a little bit, which was fun. It was exciting. And then, pretty much throughout all 10 years, there are three key moments where I knew I was doing the right thing on teaching myself iOS development so I can pivot over to that career. And pretty much the first time I experienced that, the first key reason was in 2015. You see, the oil and gas industry, while it is exciting, it does provide a good living. It's also an unstable industry. You see, when the price of crude oil drops, unfortunately, it can get to the point where people start losing their jobs, people get laid off, people get furloughed. And that was in 2015 is when I experienced that first type of mishap, or I wouldn't say mishap, but when I first experienced the downfall of what it's like to be in the oil and gas industry. There's a saying that goes on in this industry that says, if when it's good, it's good, but when it's bad, it's bad. And in 2015, I experienced the bad. And after 2015, the price of crude oil went up. That means people went back to work. People got their jobs back in a way. And the second point in time, key point in time was in 2017 when Houston got hit by Hurricane Harvey. I saw people's lives turned upside down. Some people lost their homes entirely, their belongings. It was just a mess. And because of flooded streets and whatnot, people couldn't go to work. And I'm speaking for my company that a lot of people couldn't go back to work because, streets were flooded or they were taking care of, everything that they lost. And at the time, during the whole, between the hurricane and to, the recovery process, and this was in late August, early September 2017, while us here in Houston, we were recovering from that, our company got our office in India to, pick up the workload that we couldn't do. And the company saw an opportunity there, as you can say. They pretty much got people to do our workload for a fraction of their cost. And that was, a defining moment for the company where they're like, you know what, we don't need all these people in Houston. We can get rid of the majority of them, save money by hiring those outside, the country. And that's what they did. I like to, I call Hurricane Harvey the perfect storm because it showed, unfortunately, it showed our company that, wow, we can, hire, we can get skilled labor to do the job here in Houston for a fraction of the cost. And unfortunately, I get it. It's business. And that's what happened. And I wasn't there, but what the majority of my colleagues told me at the time was that, the managers brought everyone into the break room. And one of the managers said, if I call your name, step over to my right. And he called 30 names. And when he called those 30 names, he said, I regret to inform you, but, we are parting ways with you. Today is your last day. And that was a very heartbreaking moment. These were people that were picking up their lives from, after a devastating storm, and now they just got laid off. So it was a very, very bad time. And they only got out of 50 people, they only got to keep 20 in the office, including myself. I wasn't there. I was in the field. I was somewhere else doing some work. And you know, I was fortunate enough to remain with the company. And again, that was a defining key moment number two. And about a month later, after that, I started a new role with the company as a service delivery specialist for Chevron Corporation. That's pretty much fancy speak for in-house client support specialist at Chevron Corporation. And I got that role. I started that role in October of 2017, and I knew what I signed up for. It was pretty much going to be 14 days straight, 12 hours each day. Every other month, I would have to switch over to a night shift, meaning I would work 14 nights, 12 hours each night. And at the beginning, it was great. It was fun. I got to work with people in the office that, you know, had the skill set that I would interact with out there in the field, offshore and onshore. And again, it was fun. It was exciting. And then around 2020, when the pandemic hit, we were all forced to work from home, which made the schedule even bearable. Because you know, I at least got to roll out of bed, come to my desk, and worked. And we did that for 22 months until we were forced back into the office. And I say forced liberally because that's pretty much what it was. After comfortably being working from home for 22 months, now they wanted us to readjust back to, you know, commuting and going into the office and stuff like that. And I went back to the office in December of 2021. And it was at that moment where I found myself finding it hard to adjust. I was like, you know what? You know, this is a hard adjustment, and I really cannot wait to become an iOS developer where I hope I can find a remote position and not have to deal with the trouble of, you know, there's no reason why you need to go into the office and, you know, having to do your work, be productive and everything. If we can prove that working from home. A lot of people have their own opinion about it. I personally am pro, you know, working from home. I find that I work a lot better. It helps me focus. I'm not distracted by, you know, chatter going on around. And I knew then that was my third defining moment where I was like, this is where I need to, you know, really look for an iOS developer job and, you know, finally be happy. And you're wondering, well, Joe, where does iOS development fit into all this? Well, back in December 2014, I believe that's when I got my first iPhone, and I was just blown away. I really liked it. Fell in love with it. And then I found out about, you know, at the time, people learning, you know, to code apps, and they put an app in the App Store, and people download it, and it's just, you know, wild to me that, you know, an idea can be like a product in someone's back pocket. And that's what really interested me into iOS development. So in spring of 2015, that's when I started Googling and looking for opportunities or any free courses and stuff like that to teach myself. And at the time, I found a course for Swift 2. Swift was very young. It was just introduced, you know, a year prior. And so that's when, at that moment, that's when my journey began into iOS development. And I just kept at it. And I learned the fundamentals. I learned, you know, I worked my way up. And in 2019, that's when I felt the most comfortable to actually start looking for a position out there. Now we're talking about, I'm learning from 2015. Finally, in 2019, I'm able to, you know, feel comfortable to apply. That's a 4-year stretch. And some people, they do it for a year and they're comfortable to like actually be looking for a position, you know, a year after, and which is fine, you know, if that's, you know, how you, if that's the kind of person you are, you know, everyone's learning is different. Mine, I just had a hectic schedule that I felt that it took me that long, and I needed to so I can take my time and actually learn iOS development. And so in 2019, again, I felt comfortable to start applying. But then, you know, at the turn of the year, 2020, pandemic hit, that really put, you know, some obstacles in front of me where, you know, not a lot of companies were hiring. And, you know, that pretty much put a delay in the, you know, whole job searching process. And when around the time when we were forced, I was forced back to go to the office. That's when I ramped up my search, and I got a lot of hits. I got a lot of recruiters, scheduling interviews with me, and every interview I would do, it wouldn't work out. They saw that I'd had no professional experience, and that's pretty much what was killing me. I had the skill set, but I didn't have the professional experience. And that was very aggravating because it's pretty much the vicious cycle of death, like I call it. Because you need the experience to get the job, but you also need the job to get the experience. So that's what I call the vicious cycle of death. And it was just the same song over and over again. And I went through so many interviews, different recruiters, staffing agencies, companies, you name it. And but one of the things that I took out of each interview that I could, I was learning something little by little, and it gave me somewhat of a roadmap to follow through on. I would take away key information from each interview. And I saw how common they were. They were looking for people that knew this knowledge, and when I say knowledge or, a technical skill, they wanted to know different aspects, but they were all common to each company. And what I mean by that, they wanted to see if you knew, the combined technology. They wanted to see if you knew what the difference between a class and the struct, just different little things like that. But they all came together and they were all looking for the same thing. If you knew this, this, and this. And with that being said, I would write these things down, and I would at least, once a weekend, I would pick a topic and I would go through all that until I understood it. I even made, I didn't have any cards or anything, but I had a notebook where I would write my notes down on what I've learned. And before I would do the next interview, I would read my notes and I would get familiar with what they might ask. If they asked me about concurrency, I actually, I would have a good explanation on that. So basically, there are key topics that most companies want you to know, and they know how to cherry pick you out of a lineup. If you don't know at least 3 out of 5 of the topics they bring out, you might not make it to the next round. And you want to be that person that actually has an answer. It might not be the full 100% answer, but if you have an idea of what they're asking, that goes a long way versus you saying, "Oh, I don't know about that," or "I don't know about that, but you know what? I'll note it down and I'll do my research on it." That shows interest versus you not knowing something. If you don't know it, that's fine, but at least have the appropriate answer of "I'll research it." Show interest that, "You know what? I'm going to look into it. If it's important to you as a company, I'm going to look into it." And the next thing I can tell you is have a very solid portfolio of apps. There are a lot of different apps that you can create, and a lot of them that really shows your skill set are if you create apps that talk to a backend, and it could be with a REST API or an actual database where you can read, write, delete, and update information back there. And I mean, these REST APIs and databases, a lot of them are free to use, and you just pretty much got to pick an API of something of a topic that you enjoy. So if I mean, if if you're somebody who likes cars, go out there on Google, research, a car API where you get the car name, model, color, you name it, whatever. And then make an app where, it shows these cars on the front end of the app. Add a search capability where you type in some text, you type in Corvette or Lamborghini, and it'll automatically generate or populate the Lamborghini car models on the API. Just little things like that. And I mean, a database, Google Firebase is still free. It's a very solid database backend. I still use it. Create a database, create like a simple, chat a chat app where you can authenticate and have messaging back and forth. And those two technologies are pretty solid for you to have in your portfolio. But one of the things when I interviewed with Martian Craft, they were looking for somebody with Swift UI experience. And thankfully, during my interview process, I demoed a clone of the Uber app that I was working on. I pretty much had it not completed, but I showed that it had authentication, it had map kits integrated, it had a little bit of animation, a little bit of calculated logic that would show the fares, and depending on how the distance between where the user is and the venue destination, it would calculate a base price of $5, and then depending on how many miles away, it would calculate $2 per mile, and it would show different tiers and different tiers and fares and stuff like that. So that's probably what sold them. But on the fourth and final round, they gave me a coding challenge, and it was UI Kit, and I was like, oh wow, I had dedicated a lot of time to Swift UI to get a grasp of it. But now they're giving me a coding challenge with UI Kit. And the one thing I can say is, and I think I saw on your profile here that let me see that you have Swift, you hashtag Swift UI, UI Kit. I would definitely be learning both. Start off with UI, I'm not gonna say start off with UI Kit, but I will say learn UI Kit and also Swift UI. I understand Swift UI is a new kid on the block. It's very easy to, create apps with it and stuff like that. But there are still some companies out there that still use UI Kit. And a lot of them right now, they've been doing so for the past 4 or 5 years, since, well, I want to say 3 years, because Swift UI is probably 4 years old now, going on 4 years old. A lot of these companies, they're trying to port their code over from UI Kit over to Swift UI. And if all you know is Swift UI, but you don't know that much of UI Kit, you're going to struggle to comprehend what's going on with the code in UI Kit. So the best thing I can offer and advice is, and this goes for everyone getting into iOS development, learn UI Kit, get familiar with it, get comfortable with it, and then move over to Swift UI. What if you know UI Kit and you move over to Swift UI, you'll appreciate Swift UI more. But still, I'm glad I knew UI Kit, because if I didn't, I don't think I'd be able to have successfully completed a few of the challenges of the UI Kit project I was given for the coding test. And they gave me that coding test, and there was like six features and changes that they wanted to see if I could implement. They said I didn't have to do all six. They said to do, work on it 2 to 3 hours. And if I had that amount of time, I was going to pick the top two that were complex to implement, or a feature that was a significant one to implement. So the one I did that was complex, they had this image fetcher, image network fetcher, that was that they wanted to convert over to URL session. And that I implemented, but they only had it in one particular spot, and it was in the nib related file, where it was downloading the image. Well, what I did, I created the network caller as a global component, to where like they can use it anywhere in the app, and not just in the actual nib itself where it was calling that image. And second, I implemented some caching, because they did not have any caching originally in the code, so I implemented some caching there. And I actually, that was the caching part was the feature. So not only did I make a global component network caller, I also implemented caching. The network caller was a lot more efficient, which means it used less networking data. And also, when you use cache, I mean, the photo is stored within the app, and it doesn't need to call the network as much. So that was even more efficient. So, and that's just a brief rundown of some advice that I can offer you. In my Twitter, I think I still have it pinned. Let's see. Yes, I still have it pinned. I wrote that article in September of 2021. It honestly, it's pretty much a lot more of a full rundown of the advice that I gave you. And there's some extra advice in there that I can share. If I were to go back in time and to do it all over again, I seriously would follow that roadmap. Reading just if you would just go through the article and read those tips, like I promise you, it's pretty much what I would have done if I was in someone's shoes where they just started out. I also have another article in my profile on Medium that I just published, I guess, a few weeks ago. And they're just eight topics that I was asked during those interviews with those companies. And it's a pretty solid questions. Again, there were just popular questions I was asked during all these interviews I was doing this past year. That's a 5-minute read or so, and it'll give you a good understanding of what to put on your roadmap. And I also explained those topics per my understanding. And again, it's what helped me get this far. I'm sorry if this is longer than what you expected, but I just wanted to be very thorough and not miss anything that I think would be vital for you to know. Again, thank you for reaching out. Please do reach out if you have any follow-up questions or anything like that, and I'd be very happy to help. Again, best of luck, Denny, and again, yeah, I'm here to help if you ever need it. So have a good day. Thank you.
All right. So that was, I told you it was going to be a lengthy audio there. So yeah, again, thanks to Thenny for reaching out to me and allowing me to share that information with her, and allowing me to share it with you guys. It was more of an in-depth look on how I got to this point. So with that being said, Thenny has like a very low follower count on her Twitter. So I'm thinking of showing her some love, some support. So do please and go follow Thenny. She goes with the the handle of at Thenny Corn. She has like two H's in her name. So I'll make sure to share that in the episode details. Thanks again, guys. This is gonna wrap it up. I've taken a lot of your time. And again, I do appreciate you guys listening and following me through this journey. I hope to have some more insights, some more updates next Friday or next weekend. See what I've done, see what I've talked about, stuff like that. So until then, take care of y'all selves. I hope you're all again having a great new year so far. And until then, be good to yourselves, be good to your neighbors, code a lot, build that portfolio, and happy coding. Take care.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for listening to this episode. If this episode brings you any value, do leave a review, and if you have time, a comment. Your feedback is greatly appreciated and will help me produce future episodes. If you'd like to leave me a voice message, which I would greatly look forward to, head over to anchor.fm/myswiftjourney, click on the message button, and record away. I look forward to your messages. Happy coding.